Welcome to the Ogletree Deacons Podcast, a brief discussion of compelling legal issues and practical insights. Please note that the information in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not intended to be, nor should it be construed as legal advice. You can subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts or through your favorite podcast service. Please consider rating and reviewing so that we may continue to provide the content that covers your needs. Please enjoy the program.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another in our series of Ogletree Deacons California COVID podcasts. My name is Charles Thompson. I'm a shareholder in the San Francisco office. I specialize in leaves of absences, COVID advice, and also am a frequent trial attorney. Today with us, we have Lisa Bowman. Lisa is of counsel in our San Francisco office. Before becoming a lawyer, she spent nearly a decade as an award-winning journalist for news outlets. And while she was a reporter, Lisa spent a significant amount of time writing investigative pieces about the intersection of law and politics. She holds a certificate from the Association of Workplace Investigations, and I'm going to ask her what that is in just a few seconds. And she's an active member of that group. She's also a part-time faculty member with the Association of Workplace Investigations Training Institutes and writes for the organization's journal about investigation best practices. She conducts impartial investigations and complaints of discrimination, harassment, financial fraud, and kickbacks, and also advises clients on how to conduct their own investigations. She has a master's in journalism from Northwestern University's Medill School of Journalism and a law degree from UC Hastings. Lisa, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Charles. Thanks for having me.
Of course, of course. I am going to ask, though, can you tell our listeners what the Association of Workplace Investigations is?
Yes, it's a professional membership organization for people who manage and conduct workplace investigations. They have a lot of training, a set of protocols that workplace investigators are supposed to follow when they conduct investigations. And basically, it's a networking group, so investigators can connect with each other as well. They also have a training institute, which is a week-long program that I attended in order to learn more details about workplace investigations. It's a very rigorous program. And they go over issues like report writing, questioning, assessing credibility, which is a really important component of conducting investigations. And then at the end of that, you take a test, a day-long, half-day-long test, and they give you a certificate if you pass.
Great. You know, since COVID started, I assume that there have been very few, at least in California, that there have been very few in-person workplace investigations. Is that right?
Yes. I have not done any or had any clients do any for several reasons. Obviously, going on site can be risky. Most investigations take place in a conference room. So, you know, that's not ideal for safety. And then if someone's wearing a mask, it's hard to read their expressions and things like that. So I have not seen any in-person investigations. It's all gone remote.
All right. So I'm going to ask you some questions about how our listeners might actually conduct investigations remotely, at least during COVID. Now that we're remote, what is the best way to conduct a remote investigation? Is it by Zoom? Is it by phone? Is it sitting 10 to 20 feet apart? What is it?
Well, I think it really depends on the investigation and who you're interviewing. It's sort of a lawyer answer to say that it depends, but there are some things you need to think about. You know, this might not be a mainstream opinion, but video conferencing might not always be the best way to go. I mean, you have your choice of video conferencing or phone at this point. You know, I've used Zoom a lot personally for cooking classes, wine tastings, things like that. But, you know, video conferences can be awkward. And when you're an investigator, your job is to get the best information you can from a witness. And the best way to do that is to put the witness at ease. So, you know, you might have a witness who's not very tech savvy. They don't know where to look when the camera is on, or they keep watching their own image and they get distracted, or is just very nervous. So you want to consider whether video conferencing is ideal for that person. On the other hand, you might have someone who is on Zoom calls all day or Microsoft Teams calls or, you know, the video conferencing software of their choice, and they're very familiar with it. You know, that person might be a better candidate for a video conference. And also, you know, if you have to share documents, a lot of the video conferencing software has really a good method of doing that. You know, for instance, in Zoom with document sharing, you can put the documents up there. You don't have to email them to the witness. You can just show them to the witness and you can go over them. So I think it depends on your audience. And I wouldn't discount the phone. I mean, people have obviously been using it for years. As a journalist, that was my main method when I couldn't do an in-person interview. And I think you can glean a lot by really listening to someone's voice, you know, especially where someone's tone changes or where they might really hesitate. You know, a lot of things can come through on the phone when you get rid of distractions. So you want to make sure that you are thinking about that as you're planning your interviews. You're thinking about the person that you're interviewing on the other side and what might make them most comfortable and most likely to give you as much information as you can glean from them.
Okay. Are there any advantages to remote investigations that you can think of?
There are, and I think we're having to embrace those more and more as this becomes our new normal. They're obviously cheaper, costs a lot less to set up a video conference or a phone call than to travel to an in-person interview. So you can do a larger volume of interviews. They can also be more private. And, you know, that's something to consider if you're doing a really sensitive investigation in these open office floor plans. You know, even if you have an interview off to the side in the conference room, you know, people can see who's coming and going and chatter starts among the workforce. So, you know, they can be more private. And then flexibility of scheduling. It's easier to suggest times that are outside of the normal work hours because people are getting used to sliding their schedule in one direction or another.
Any disadvantages that you can think of about remote investigations?
Yes, I think that there are several that we need to work to overcome as investigators. Rapport is a big one. You really have to be more sensitive and sort of go over, you know, above and beyond to strike a rapport with somebody because you're not having an in-person human interaction. Technological issues can be a challenge. You know, internet service, people unfamiliar with video conferencing, more distractions as people work from home. And then also, because I'm a wage and hour attorney, also, I view things through that lens. Reimbursement issues, pay issues. If you have an essential worker and they typically work on site and now you're asking them to do an interview remotely with their own equipment, you want to think about compensation for those things. And then the remote situation, it presents an opportunity for an interviewee to be, you know, for lack of a better word, shady. They can surreptitiously record, bring prepared notes, have someone in the room you can't see. So those are the challenges that we're facing. And, you know, some things you can do about them are, you know, at the beginning of an interview, you would typically advise the witness the normal admonition, you know, with the normal admonitions, you know, that the investigator doesn't represent the witness, but rather is a third party trying to glean facts. The witness should answer truthfully and honestly. Investigation should be kept confidential and that the company can't retaliate. And those are, you know, the main admonitions. But nowadays, we would recommend adding a few additional ones.
Such as?
Yeah. Including, you know, I'm not recording and you shouldn't record. You know, it's important that this investigation remain confidential. So please confirm there's no one else in the room. You should ask them to exit out of any screens that they might have up so you can focus on the interview. And then be sure to have a phone number or contact information in case the technology goes down.
Those are good ideas. I guess, you know, as a lawyer, one of the things, or, you know, sometimes I do investigations or you're just trying to get information from a witness, you know, for a trial or something. And I would be concerned about developing rapport with the witness, you know, because you want to bond with the witness to the extent you can, find some common ground, et cetera. So how do you develop rapport during remote investigations with a witness?
Well, I think you really just have to go the extra mile and make that a priority at the beginning of your call. You know, typically, you know, you might ask about the person's commute or whether they had trouble finding the location. Obviously, you can't ask about that. So you want to find topics that you can talk about that are common. And also be really careful about your tone, because a video conference can really exacerbate issues with tone. You know, if you come in and say, you know, isn't it true that X, Y, and Z in a tone that's really confrontational, there's a risk that the witness might shut down, and that's not what you want. So, you know, think of topics that you can ask about that are sort of neutral, but can spark some conversation, you know, talk about what strange times these are, ask about, you know, acknowledge that video conferencing, if that's how you're doing it, you know, can be a little strange. And, you know, and really be sensitive that someone is probably inviting you into their home. They are probably doing it either from a home office, their kitchen, things like that. So you might hear their children or their dogs. So just be sensitive to that. And you just try to find new topics that can be common before you dive right into the interview. And then while you're doing the interview, you know, be careful of your tone.
Do you find it more difficult in a remote investigation to judge credibility?
I think that it can be more difficult because you can't judge as well in person. On the phone, I think if you really, really listen, you can hear if a person, you know, hesitates during certain lines of questioning compared with how they did it before. Same with a video conference. You want to compare how they are presenting during the easy questioning with how they're presenting during the more difficult questioning. You know, you don't want to necessarily come out and say, well, this person just seemed nervous overall, because you don't know, that person might be nervous anyway, or they might just be nervous on video conference calls. So I do think it is more difficult to judge credibility. But I think if you, you know, really pay attention to what they're saying, to pay attention to inconsistencies, if they're telling you one thing at one point in the conversation and telling you something different, inconsistencies can go to credibility. You know, are they corroborating, or was what they're telling you corroborated by someone else? Corroboration is an important component. So there are things that you can really look for when you're doing a remote investigation. But I think, you know, doing it by phone or video conference, you're just going to have to be more focused in doing so.
Okay. And are there situations in which you would delay a critical interview to either do it in person, or have you moved everything to video conferencing or phone right now?
Right now, I have moved everything to video conferencing and phone, and I think most investigators have. You know, back when we first went into shelter in place, this question was asked frequently. You know, should we put it off? You know, when you thought shelter in place and social distancing was going to be not for months and months, but maybe for weeks and weeks. So no, nowadays I would not delay. In California, the law requires a prompt, thorough, and impartial investigation, PTI, or the, how I remember that. So, you know, waiting until the in-person interviews are allowed might delay, you know, would obviously delay the interview, and witnesses forget things and you want to be able to track people down. So I would not do that. And, you know, back when I was a journalist, I was on deadline at the end of the day. So I couldn't delay an interview with someone across the country to hop on a plane, and I would miss my deadline if I did that. So I would hop on the phone with them back before video conferencing was widely used. I think that promptness should take priority over an in-person interview.
Particularly since, at least in harassment investigations, California law requires it.
Exactly. And can I ask you a question, Charles?
If I say you just did, are we done? No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Additional question.
You're giving a substantive question. Okay, go ahead.
you know, you've had cases where you've seen attorneys try to discredit investigation reports. And it would be great to hear what the biggest holes you've seen in investigations. And, you know, do you think remote investigations might compound any of those?
You know, that's, I've thought about that, but most of the critiques that I've seen, and, you know, at trial primarily about workplace investigations, don't go to remote. Instead, they go to the training of the investigator. You know, many times, if it's not the head of HR, it will be someone lower who has a more general HR background, who hasn't been trained in investigations or hasn't done a lot of investigations. So I don't think really the remote resolves or has anything to do with that. I guess the other thing is that failing to ask comprehensive questions, failing to ask follow-up questions, like, okay, well, how many times did you see that happen? What did you hear? All right. And when so-and-so told you that, how did that person respond? Or how did that what was that person's tone of voice? Those are usually the types of things that I see in trials when expert witnesses are trying to discredit investigation reports. And I don't think being remote or not being remote go to any of those weaknesses. So, Lisa, anything else that you can think of that you know, our listeners should take into account when they conduct remote as opposed to in-person investigations, at least while the pandemic is going on?
Yeah, just one final thing about documents. When you're going over documents, there was a really great tip that I got early on in the investigation. And that is, you know, if you're doing screen sharing, a really great way to be organized with your documents is to have them all in one, either PDF or Word file or however you keep them, and have page numbers or exhibit sheets or something like that, so you can page through them really quickly, because being really organized with your documents is really important. And it's a very, very big difference between doing a remote investigation compared with an in-person investigation. And when you're in person, you can slide that document across, but you can't do that. So you have to have sort of the remote equivalent of that. So that was just another tip that was provided to me that I thought have found very helpful and wanted to pass that along.
Oh, great. Okay. Hey, Lisa, thanks very much for doing this. We really appreciate it. And we will be back hopefully next week with another in our series of California COVID podcasts. And we look forward to having you all tune in again. Thanks very much.
Thank you for joining us on the Ogletree Deacons podcast. You can subscribe to our podcasts on Apple Podcasts or through your favorite podcast service. Please consider rating and reviewing so that we may continue to provide the content that covers your needs. And remember, the information in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not to be construed as legal advice.